May it please the court. Yes, Your Honor. My name is David Smolin. I represent Howard Baker. My comments are going to be limited to whether or not the 404B evidence introduced by Trina Kiomala was properly introduced. However, I want the court to understand, I'm not asking the court to second guess the district court's decision to allow this 404B evidence into this 404B testimony into evidence. It would not be possible for the court to second-guess the district court's decision because the district court clearly never made a decision whether this evidence should be admitted. The district court was confused. The district court thought that different types of 404B testimony, which it had previously considered, was going to be introduced. This is error, plain and simple, and deprived Mr. Baker of a fair trial. Now, the prejudicial effect of prior act testimony is well recognized by this appellate court.
Was there an objection based on Rule 403?
Was there an objection, Your Honor? Well, Document 28 was a motion in limine. It was introduced.
This particular evidence was not covered by the ruling on the motion in limine. The question
I guess
I'm
that's
asking,
correct. However, I think the court...
Look, just listen to my question. Was there an objection at trial to this evidence based on Rule 403?
There was not, Your Honor.
Was there an objection based on Rule 402?
I don't believe there was, Your Honor. Nonetheless, it is clear then that this was plain error, the introduction of this testimony. I was going to go into more about why this testimony was prejudicial, but let's move away from that.
Well, of course, it's given the lack of action, it's easy to see why the district court did not undertake the sort of balancing required by Rule 403 and this court's cases.
That's correct, Your Honor. There should have been...
Or blame the district judge.
Well, Your Honor, the district judge was well aware of what he ruled on the 404B testimony that he said he would introduce. However... He was aware of what he had already ruled on, and he still allowed Ms. Trina Kiyoma to testify. However, the district court made a mistake, the defense lawyer made a mistake, and the prosecutor also made a mistake. They all thought that this issue had been presented to the court. However, because the judge, the government attorney, and the defense lawyer made a mistake, Howard Baker is doing 30 years in jail today. Now, I believe this is plain error. I from your question, I'm assuming that the court agrees that an error occurred, the error was plain, and it affected his substantial rights. Because if it's accepted his, if this was prejudicial, and the court sort of indicated...
It's very difficult to know whether an error occurred. If it was an error, it was almost certainly an error in the application of Rule 402. That is, this evidence was not relevant. But I don't understand you to be making a relevance argument, even on appeal.
That's correct, Your Honor. I'm making an argument that the role of the appellate court is to see whether or not there was a balancing test performed by the judge of whether or not the probative value outweighs the prejudicial effect of the evidence.
Let's suppose there was an objection. You've got a case where the defendant's defense is that's not my crack cocaine. I had nothing to do with that. Isn't it relevant that he was a crack dealer?
Of course it's relevant that he's a crack dealer, and that's exactly the point of the case here.
Don't you think the judge would have allowed her testimony to that effect?
No, I do not believe the judge would allow the testimony. But, of course, it's relevant. That's the whole point about the balancing test. Sometimes it's so relevant that the jury would prejudge the case and not allow the defendant an opportunity to defend himself against the charges he was facing. I mean, the cases are clear. That's why we need the balancing test. Now, the reason why I don't believe the judge would allow this into evidence is, first of all, Ms. Kiyoma testified that her first act of prior drug dealing for the defendant was in 2006, which is 3 years before the time of the arrest. It's also 2 years prior to the time of the other prior acts that the judge indicated he would allow in. But when the judge said he was going to allow in those other acts of prior drug dealing, he specifically said it's because it's close in time. Those were 2008. The first act from Triola Connolly was in 2006. So, first of all, I think that's a big distinction to time. But second of all, there was time within. Second of all, is that there is direct evidence of the defendant's drug dealing. The direct evidence is that Ms. Trina Quilmes testified that the defendant called her the day of the arrest and the day after arrest and said, "I was posted up selling drugs." Well, if the judge was allowing this in for identity and for knowledge, if there's direct testimony of identity and knowledge, there's no reason for this evidence. The only reason for this evidence would be basically to prejudice the jury and to prejudge this case and to have the jury decide the case on emotion and not the facts. And furthermore, Rule 404.3 says that the judge should exclude relevant evidence.
I bet you're one hell of a trial lawyer before.
Thank you, Your Honor.
But
I'll slow down a little bit. I'm just trying to get a little
more.
That's fine, Your Honor. But thirdly, Your Honor, Rule 403 test states that the cumulative, even if it's relevant evidence, the judge could exclude it if it's cumulative and unnecessary repetitive.
No,
and
nobody doubts that the judge could exclude it.
It could exclude it. That's correct. And in this situation, I think the judge probably would if he would have viewed it, because 404B evidence is inherently prejudicial. So if there's cumulative evidence about nature and intent.
I have no idea what that means.
It means that
what Rule 404B prohibits is the use of other crimes to demonstrate propensity. It doesn't prohibit the use of other crimes for other purposes. Now, the main issues in these cases, therefore, don't have to do with Rule 404B. They have to do with Rule 402, whether the evidence is relevant, and then, if it's relevant, whether under the balancing in Rule 403, a prejudicial effect outweighs the relevant effect. You can't answer either of those questions by continually referring to Rule 404. And that's the puzzle. Your appeal doesn't argue Rules 402 and 403. It seems hung up on Rule 404B, which doesn't control the outcome.
Well, Your Honor, it controls the outcome if there was never any determination by the trial judge as to whether the relevance of the 402 was outweighed by the prejudicial effect
of the
evidence.
That's the Rule 403 question. It is not a Rule 404 question.
Prior acts, Your Honor, is inherent.
I don't think there is such a thing as plain error under Rule 403. If no one asks the district judge to apply the Rule 403 criteria, it's very difficult to see why the judge should do it unbidden.
Basically, Your Honor, and this would be my last comment to save some time for rebuttal, is because we want to ensure that the trier of fact does not prejudge the case and is not swayed by the prior acts, that he limits the jury limits their determination to the evidence of the crime charged and not something the defendant had done in the past. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smullen. Ms. Mullen.
May it please the Court. Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. We're not going to stand here and suggest that this record isn't muddled and that people weren't confused. And in fact, that's why we put in the district court's original 11-page order to give context to sort of what happened here and to help explain why the district court was confused. That certainly doesn't excuse the government's failure to step up and say something when it was clear that the district court was confused. And I think at the first point, when the district court started instructing the jury about the proper use of Trina Chiamola's testimony, it was clear that the district court thought this was subsumed in my earlier order. We've already discussed this. Again, as we point out in our brief, that's an understandable confusion given the similarities between the evidence. The judge did give that instruction twice during the testimony. Then there's this lengthy colloquy that we set forth in our brief between all the parties where the confusion is revealed. The judge says, I thought this was the testimony that I had ruled on earlier. The prosecutor says, no, we don't think this is 404B. Clearly part of it is direct evidence about what he was doing that night and what he said he was doing. But the prior 3 years, or it's actually a little over 2 years worth of drug distributions in that relationship, the prosecutor felt was intricately intertwined. It isn't clear from that colloquy whether the judge agreed with that or didn't, but certainly invited the parties to litigate that issue and talk about that issue, what instructions are proper now, what do we do now. And defense counsel said, go ahead and give the 404B instruction again at the close of the evidence. So we're here on a plain error standard with respect to the 404B. We understand that. And so now we need to look to see whether or not this evidence was properly admitted. And the only reason we put in the judge's prior order is to give some context for the type of analysis, because it is strikingly similar testimony. And contrary, I do have to correct one factual dispute that we have with, or that I have with my opposing counsel. The evidence from Kiamala dated from late 2006 to 2009, and the other was from early 2007. So we really only have a 2-year difference here, or a 1-year difference here rather than a 2, in terms of the time frame of the evidence. Clearly, the evidence was relevant or probative here, especially given that this was an innocent bystander defense in this case. This court has said repeatedly it's relevant under those circumstances. When we look at the balancing test here, it was not, that was not grossly outweighed by the prejudicial impact, especially given the limiting instructions here. So we would suggest that this, especially under a plain error standard, this evidence was properly admitted and the district court did not plainly err. If the court has no questions, I'll return the balance of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mullen. Anything further, Mr. Smolin?
Yes, briefly, Your Honor. If we recognize the fact that the trial court must do some sort of balancing test between the prejudicial effect of the evidence against the probative value of the evidence, then I'll submit to the court that this is not the right place for us to do this balancing test. The reason the court gives deference to evidentiary rulings to the trial court is because only the trial court could make that kind of determination. That determination was not made. Consequently, there was error. Now, the fact whether or not it's plain error, basically because it would affect the public reputation of the proceedings. A man is doing 30 years in jail because evidence was introduced that never should have been introduced. I cannot imagine anything else than a man doing 30 years in jail after not receiving a fair trial would bring more disrespect to the proceedings of that specific case and the entire court and the entire court system. However, one last thing. The government points out in the brief that the judge specifically stated that this evidence, this Tremola Kioma, you're welcome, Your Honor. Thank you.
Case taken under advisement. Our final.